Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Pastor Brian Podcast. I'm your host, Pastor Brian. I've been an ordained pastor for 12 years. In all those years, and before, I found following Christ by myself hard. But when I walked with others, not only did I follow Christ better, but I found Christ's holiness to be a gift. We hope to be a community where you find the joy of social holiness, learning from others through Christ's work in each of our lives. So come on in. I look forward to praying with you. We'll begin with a prayer from the 1979 Book of Common Prayer. Almighty and everlasting God, you have given to us, your servants, grace, by the confession of true faith, to acknowledge the glory of the eternal Trinity, and in the power of your divine majesty, to worship the unity. Keep us steadfast in this faith and worship, and bring us at last to see your one and eternal glory, O Father, who with the Son and the Holy Spirit live and reign, one God, forever and ever. Amen. Before we begin our interview, I wanted to take a moment to talk about our new season and format at Pastor Brian Podcast. As we prayed about the future and heard from folks, a daily or weekly 10-minute prayer did not seem to be where there was the most need. Now, we will have a monthly interview format with guests. Not only will it feature theologians, scholars, pastors, and writers who help others in Christ, but half our conversations will be devoted to everyday Christians. Laity, the term the old church used, who are often so overlooked, but do most of the ministry of Christ's mission on earth. We hope to highlight these amazing people. I promise you will be inspired, encouraged, caused to think and question, and called to a deeper faithfulness in Jesus Christ. But don't worry, we will still pray in every episode, just in a new way. I think it also important to speak about the kind of conversations we will be having with other Christians and my role in them. Yes, I am an individual, but I am a person from a certain place and shaped by traditions in church and our society. I'm an evangelical Christian, particularly from the holiness movement in the Wesleyan Methodist tradition. I am from a poor family in the poor rural American Midwest. Also, I'm a white, Anglo-Saxon Protestant male, currently living in the suburbs of a major metropolitan city of the world. As much as I will try to be unbiased in these conversations, I will still, even unwittingly, bring these lenses to the conversations. However, I will strive to be fair, caring, and Christ-like to our guests. These conversations are meant to highlight their faith with Christ and their calling, even if we may disagree about things. I'm not going to try to debate or challenge them, but try to find places where we can learn and grow in Christ together. As far as this specific conversation with Vicki Austin, it was done in my new sunroom, which is surrounded by open windows. Although we are both vaccinated and socially distanced in this conversation so we could be unmasked, we opened the windows just to add extra mitigation, which is why you will occasionally hear my neighbor's dogs or the cicadas humming, even though we did a pretty good job of editing and filtering most of it out. Yet, we could not edit out the jet planes and gentleman wandering in my backyard singing loudly to himself. So I had to edit the ending time of prayer out. But most of the time, we will end in prayer, specifically around the subjects we were discussing. Also, be sure to check out the show notes for links on the books, tools, and subjects mentioned, along with the recipes from our lunches. So, without further ado, here is our interview after a homemade lunch with Vicki Austin. May her story bless you today. I am so thankful to have Vicki Austin, president of the Wheaton, Illinois Chamber of Commerce, founder of Choices Worldwide, with us today as our inaugural guest.
Yay!
For our new format at the Pastor Brian Podcast. So thank you for coming to my house, Vicki.
Oh, thank you, Pastor Brian, for asking me. I'm so honored to be the inaugural guest.
Oh, thank you. We just had lunch together, me, you, and my wife, Beth.
Yes.
And so Beth made me promise that every show we would talk about, we would reveal the menu.
Oh, good.
Because she believes that this is important.
I totally agree.
So I'll just say it. It was pan-seared and roasted chicken with roasted carrots and paper-steamed asparagus topped with pepper and Parmesan. The recipes were from Gordon Ramsay and Nancy Silverton, not me.
that was amazing. And again, a total perk to this opportunity. I did not expect to be wined and dined.
Thank you for doing it and being a guinea pig for my cooking.
Happy to be a guinea pig anytime.
If this goes over our prescribed podcast time, we'll just make a bonus episode.
That sounds good.
All right. You know, with the rest of the questions right off the bat, a Vicky Austin bonus episode. A good way to start. So let's jump right in. All right.
Sounds good.
How did you first hear God's call in your life? And how would you describe your beginning steps in following Christ as Lord and Savior?
I was brought up in a Methodist home. My father had actually been a Methodist minister, a lay minister in Colorado, and my grandmother was a Methodist minister, a lay minister in Grand Island, Nebraska. So I grew up in the faith of Methodism, and so it was something I didn't even know. It's kind of like a fish in water. You don't know any differently. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say that there was any one altar call or epiphany. It was growing up in the safety and love of a church family. However, we moved a lot. So when we moved, I remember when we moved to Bangor, Maine, there weren't a lot of options up there, I think, for Methodist church. So we went to a congregational church briefly. And of my other siblings, my two siblings, my sister converted to Catholicism. My brother is Baha'i, and I have stayed with the Methodist tradition. And I couldn't really tell you why, except that there's a comfort and a real connection to history mm-hmm. and to my family, to my original family.
I'm always impressed and thankful for your commitment to Christ. I always think you do such a wonderful job. I want to make some connections also not with your career. Yes. But so what drew you to a career in business and professional services?
I was a liberal arts major, and I went to school. I met Bill actually at Arizona State University. My dad was a professor there, and I was an English major, and I used to ride my bike to school, and I would practically hold my nose riding by the W.P. Carey School of Business. Because in my mind, my dad was a professor, and I grew up without any real context of the business world. I had a stereotype of business as, again, strictly capitalism, you know, unrelated to faith. You know, I was going to be a poet. I was living in a different world of the arts, even maybe disdainful of the business world. I got mixed messages growing up, as many of us do, that, you know, it's good to make money, just not too much money, right? Mm. That there was sort of a Methodist mentality mm-hmm. of, yes. you know, not having excess. So when I was a reporter, I made just enough money, barely. In fact, I think at the end of the day, I didn't make enough to cover our daycare. Mm. And it became important to me to be paid what I was worth in the marketplace, whatever that was. So I started reading about careers. One of the best books that I read was called Wishcraft by Barbara Scherer. It's W-I-S-H, craft, lest anyone thinks I'm part of a coven. Wishcraft, like, what do you wish for? And it's still a classic in the career coaching world. Out of doing the exercises in that book, one of the things they recommended was go and interview people whom you admire. And I went and interviewed a woman at a hospital. So I had interviewed this woman at a hospital that I'd known about. And I ended up going to a workshop, and there was a woman named Edna Hennessy. She had been a single mom in Lawton, Oklahoma. And she had a company, a Hennessy Cosmetic Company, and I'll never forget her. She had this fiery red hair and really made a huge impact on me. She stood up and she said, I remember her saying, I don't want to hear that you can't do what you want to do because you're married. I don't want to hear that you can't fulfill your dreams because you have children. I'm like, check, check. And then she said, and I don't ever want to hear you say, and she's talking to 30 women, but I'm thinking she's talking directly to me. And again, if there was like a voice of God, it was through Edna Hennessy. She said, and I don't want to hear you say that you can't express yourself and find the work that you want to do just because you live in Lawton, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And I was like, busted. I turned and I looked, and one of my friends was actually working for the television station. So I ended up interviewing to become a television reporter. I'd been a newspaper reporter. I went out and I interviewed as a television reporter. And in fact, I got the offer, but it was for the same pitiful salary that I had received as a reporter. And there was the hospital where I interviewed the executive director. I remembered the woman who had been the PR director. Her name was Helen Hooper. She was the one who, when I'd been at the newspaper, she fed me news releases and great story ideas. I did a lot of coverage of their hospital because they were doing so much in community education. And I stopped in to see her without an appointment. And she graciously agreed to see me. And I told her I was looking for work. And the connection that I'd made was the only skill I felt I could really bring to the business world, again, of which I knew nothing, was my writing abilities. I'd been a writer, I've been a writer all my life. That's my core. I feel like that's really at my core skill. And spoke to Helen and I said, I'm looking for work. I just got offered this job at KSWO TV, which is, glamorous, but I knew that that would wear off the joy of being on television as a TV reporter. And I said, I'm looking to use my writing skills in the business world. What would you recommend? And she sat there for a minute and she said, we might be able to use your skills, because it turned out that she wasn't the PR director. She was what we called then the personnel director. And the only reason she was doing the writing and the PR was because she didn't have anybody to do it. So it was one of those serendipitous, like she needed what I had, but I completely, again, being so naive, and I'm like, yeah, hon, thanks really. But what should I do? Like I completely glossed over that. And she said, no, don't accept the job yet. See if you can stall them. And she said, let me talk to my executive director. So they created a position for me.
Oh, wow.
I know, because she needed a writer. So I started out as a part-time contractor. They ultimately promoted me to director of community relations. And that was the beginning of my corporate career. It was where I got my first introduction to business. And I was just, smitten. I had a place where I had a desk, I had a phone, I had, I remember my very first office, I had to share it with, they were storing, they call them birdies. They're the tall things for respiratory therapy that go off when somebody stops breathing right. Mm-hmm. So they had like a whole bunch of them shoved off in a corner and my desk on the other side. I could not have been happier. I mean, I've had offices on the 60th floor of the Aon building, but I have to say that first office was pretty sweet.
Speaking of offices,
yes,
and starting new things.
Yes.
What do you do at Choices Worldwide?
Well, Choices Worldwide is actually on hiatus right now.
Okay.
So my coaching practice, which I did for 23 years, five of them part-time and then 20 of them as a full-time entrepreneur, I recently took a full-time job. So my coaching practice, I like to say it's on ice. It's not dead. I haven't completed, I still have people I'm in touch with. But I am giving my full attention right now to the chamber.
Why were you compelled to start your own business and found Choices Worldwide?
I started Choices Worldwide out of, really, it was a God moment where I lost a job. I was actually fired from the job that brought us here to Chicago, to the Wheaton area, but I worked in Chicago. And it was a job for which I was ill-fitted. However, I had so much at stake. I'd uprooted my family, left mm-hmm. my parents and my sister and her family, moved my family to Chicago area where Bill is from. And that, that was part of the deal, was we were moving and we would be closer to his family as well as I had this wonderful opportunity. But when I found myself sort of paralyzed in a job that was a bad fit, I was paralyzed and I didn't act. I was too afraid. I worked crazy late nights. I worked harder instead of smarter. And I take full responsibility for getting fired. It was kind of like I compare it to having a boyfriend who broke up with me before I broke up with him. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was just a matter of time or who broke up with whom. So they were actually very kind to me. And I started going to a job club in Naperville, which I can highly recommend. It's still in existence. It's through the, well, I think it's called the Career Resource Network now, based in Naperville. They have a weekly, what they call a job club, and it's to be with other people who are looking. At that time, the organizer, her name was Joy Dooley, Joy McGuire Dooley. Once I got fired, I went through a deep depression of shame. I felt shame. I felt, you know, I really was mortified. I felt like I'd let my family down, and I had many, many dark nights. And so it was truly the darkest time of my soul. And yet I went quickly from desperation to liberation. I felt what I'd learned from it was when it's a bad fit, you know, make a change. Like there's so many opportunities out there. And I also realized that I had the power to make these changes. So I ended up landing a job at a publication called Modern Healthcare and it was a magazine I'd actually grown up in the industry reading. So it was a dream come true job. And then Joy asked me to come back and speak when I could, as somebody who had been through that program. So my first day off, I volunteered to speak at this job club. And I created a short presentation called The 10 Commandments of Loving Your Job is what I called it. And what I wanted to share with people, what I learned is that you must love your work. It is vocation, vocare. It needs to be. And I hate to say that because that doesn't mean that everybody is fully fulfilled in their job. They may have something else that fulfills them. So it's not judging the people. But I've definitely, the message I got was, use the gifts that God has given you in a way to be of service to others. And again, with my Methodist upbringing, it's all about being of service. And so I saw that I hadn't been doing that. So what I wanted to share with the group was, you know, love what you do, focus on making a difference with others. You know, it's kind of like a step of if you find yourself, you know, sick to your stomach on Sunday night before you start work on Monday, that's a clue. I mean, I had all the stress, insomnia, couldn't sleep, and I couldn't eat. I lost weight, which was great, Brian, but that's not the way. That's not a healthy way to lose weight. So I was really, I was sort of stuck and paralyzed. And it came, again, it came so much from my own head that I had to just, you know, keep going. So again, it was a gift when I got let go, but it didn't feel that way. So I wanted to share that with these people. And after the presentation, there was a gentleman in the audience named Bill Kernan. He was an older gentleman, probably in his 70s. He was a retired human resource executive, and he volunteered at the job club to help people with their resumes, to help write resumes. So he was a participant, but as a volunteer, he wasn't looking for a job. He came up to me at the afterwards, as we were, you know, talking and saying goodbye. And he said, and he looked at me, and I'll never forget, I only met him that one time, but he had eyes like yours, those blue, cornflower blue eyes. And he looked at me and he said, "You should be doing this for a living." When this gentleman said that to me, though, I think he meant that I should be a speaker. I think he meant you should be speaking full time. What I heard, though, how I interpreted it was that I should be sharing this story. And I said, "Well, it's funny that you say that, because someday," and here's the old, you know, be careful what you wish for. I said, "Someday I'd love to coach people on career transition, because I really get that and I had been using strategic planning as a model for my own transition, and I'd helped other people, either their careers or their businesses, helping them put together a plan. I said, "Because someday I'd love to help people, you know, create career plans and help them fulfill their career dreams." Well, that night when I got home, I had two messages on my voicemail. One was from Bill Kernan saying, again, "Thank you so much for coming. Your message was so impactful. And thank you, you know, for inspiring us." And the second message was actually from a woman named Cynthia, who had been a participant in the job club. And she said, "I'm calling because I was at the job club today and I heard you speak. Bill Kernan told me you're a career coach and I'd like to hire you."
Oh, wow.
And I said, I called her back the next day and I was like, "Well, I'm very flattered. Just to be clear, what I said was someday, but I could help you. As long as you understand, I don't have any structure around the business." So it literally was out of that one conversation, and this gentleman saw something in me that I couldn't see in myself. And I really considered him an angel. Yeah. I never saw him again. I did communicate with him. I got his address and wrote him a thank you note. And I wrote him another note later to let him know how, you know, that literally I was creating a business just because he had referred me that first client. And so I very slowly started coaching on the side. And I had a full-time job. By then I'd landed, as I said, at Modern Healthcare. But I started seeing clients like evenings and weekends. And then pretty soon I declared like Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday were my office hours for Choices Worldwide. And I called it that because, well, for a variety of reasons, but because really we do have choices. And I wanted to emphasize that we have way more choices than we're sometimes even aware of. So empowering people, not just through you go girl or you go guy. I literally had a tool, the strategic plan model, that helped me and it helped other people. And I used it in my coaching. And my what they now call a side hustle, my side hustle of 5 years, by the time I left, I had actually changed jobs again. I loved my job, but I hated the commute. And so I ended up at Mary and Joy, my last day job before the one I'm in now, was as vice president of marketing at Mary and Joy. And I was able to build my practice locally. I ended up, you know, renting space by the hour and, you know, seeing clients face to face when I could. And then I pulled the trigger in July of 2021. Yeah. And then I did it full time as an entrepreneur. And because of the volunteering that I did at the Wheaton Chamber of Commerce, the chamber was really a wonderful platform for me to grow and learn. I joined the chamber to learn, not to generate money or business so much as to learn how to generate money in business. And, you know, I served in a variety of capacities. I was on the board. I'm now an ambassador, became an ambassador, which is sort of what you do after have already been on the board or in leadership roles. And I, when Carrie O'Brien, who was the president of the chamber, left last year, a year ago, they asked me to serve as an interim, and I did it as an interim. And then I decided I was having so much fun, I threw my hat in the ring and now I'm president.
You're talking about how it was a God moment, mm-hmm. that Bill Kernan really helped you see that. And that was really God working through him.
Yes.
For you to see that. So how do you think your faith in Christ and your work at Choices Worldwide and now as the president of the Chamber of Commerce mm-hmm. inform and support each other? I think that's something that people would be, because I think a lot of times people think that business and being in your faith don't go together.
Exactly. Well, that goes back to me holding my nose as I rode my mm-hmm. bike past the business school, right? And being, you know, feeling a sense of moral superiority. And that's not true. Business is all about relationships. I have, in my past, Brian, I've told clients or I've asked clients, it's actually sort of part of my vetting process, or it was part of my vetting process. I would ask them about not their religion, but I would ask them about their faith tradition, or, you know, do you have a faith tradition? Because it is absolutely imperative. I don't know how anybody could do a reinvention of themselves or start a business without faith. And I would sometimes joke, you know, you gotta have faith. If you don't have one, I have enough for both of us to get you started. Like I would, you know, I would really insist that they have some kind of, because how can you do anything? I mean, really anything hard without having some kind of a faith context. To me, that's a critical component of someone's, of all of our lives and our trajectories and our business or our careers are just one more part of that. Mm. So without faith, I don't think anyone can embark on something new. I mean, they can, but I think it's much more comforting and certainly gives people strength. And also there's, you know, the community. When I lost my job, Gary United Methodist was a haven for me. I can remember hot tears coming, you know, during the prayers and asking for strength to get through, you know, that dark period. Mm. I remember the pastor then, Ed Taverne, asked me to speak on Stewardship Sunday. And it was, I didn't have a job at that point. So I did it was the first time I had ever pledged. And I made a pledge with no promise of being able to fulfill on it. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm very, very leery of the prosperity
theology.
That's, mm-hmm. you know, anathema to how I think. However, I will say that there was something about, you know, I've heard the phrase, you know, throwing your hat over the fence, right? Throwing your hat over, like putting it out there that I am making this commitment on the faith that God will provide so that I can fulfill on that promise. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, literally within weeks, I had that new job.
That's amazing.
I know. I know.
Thank you for telling me that story.
It was really a lesson for me in, you know, faith comes first and then, you know, it doesn't mean it's magic. It means then I was doing the work, right? I was doing the work. And it, you know, fulfilled.
But you participate with God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You follow God's leading.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we've been speaking of kind of things the world has been going through and tough times. We've been going through this COVID pandemic for a long time.
Yes,
now.
Too long.
And it's especially impacted the work and careers of millions of people in this nation and around the world. I was speaking to a friend the other day and we called it the great discernment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being in lockdown and mitigations has really caused many to question their decisions.
Yes.
And paths in life, especially when it comes to their jobs.
Yeah.
So what tools or ways of thinking, I know you've talked about some already, but what tools or way of thinking would you give a person who asks, I feel dissatisfied in my work life,
mm-hmm.
but I can't tell if that's the pandemic or a career change that I need to make?
Mm-hmm. It is, in some ways, the most wonderful time to be looking at what's next. What better time when unemployment is so low and people are having trouble finding staff? I think the pandemic has challenged all of our thoughts on how business can and should work. Mm. Just the example, and I know I'm not being original here. I read a lot about the workplace and issues related to employment and business. Just the idea of remote working and how successful that has been for many industries that would never in a million years without the, you know, wrath of a pandemic have, quote, allowed, end quote, their employees to work from home. Mm. And it's forced their hand at allowing people more autonomy. I read a study once about stress and the people. You would think that high-powered executives would be more stressed than, say, an assembly line worker, but it's actually the other way around. And that's because assembly line workers have no flexibility, or typically in an ordinary world, you know, they're told when to show up and what to wear and how to do, and whereas executives have a lot more flexibility. And so now I think what's happened is people who have experienced this kind of flexibility have realized, or the companies have realized, that their productivity has, many of them, has actually exceeded what it was when people are sitting around in cubicles. Mm. So it's totally upended many of the ways we thought before about productivity, about commuting. You know, there are people who do not ever, ever want to get on a train again going into the city, or, you know, doing whatever they have to do to commute. So I think the employees now have, you know, it's kind of, they talk about a buyer's market and a seller's market. Mm-hmm. It's an employee's market right now. And people are inventing new ways of doing business and reinventing the way they've done business. It could not be a better time.
So you would say, when people are trying to discern, if you are even thinking about it, that's a pretty good indication that this isn't the pandemic. This is you needing a change.
Yes, I think so. And I do think there's a wonderful book called Callings by a gentleman named Greg Lavoie. We actually brought him to Gary Church and he gave a workshop, which was because I'd read it. I was doing book reviews at Borders at the time. And I shared the book with our pastor and he invited me to invite this gentleman here for a workshop. And Callings is probably one of the best books I've ever read about the process of, first of all, hearing a calling, heeding a calling, or not heeding a calling, because both are powerful choices. I think the thing I loved most about Greg's book is that he emphasized that just because you answer the calling doesn't mean like a Disney ending. Mm. You know, sometimes answering a calling, he talked about a woman whose calling was to kayak around all of the Great Lakes. And in the meantime, her marriage dissolved. You know, there are sometimes costs. There are always costs to our choice. And actually, this goes back to the accounting world of cost and benefit. There's a benefit, but there's always a trade-off. So one of the things that I did with my clients was I was very, very, you know, a career coach. I was a career and a business coach, not a life coach.
Right.
And this isn't to say anything, you know, derogatory about life coaching, but life coaching is very different from, like, I was very much in the world of business and careers. And so I had a series of tools to help people, again, that discernment process. And I was very conservative, or I gave very conservative coaching regarding, like, if somebody came to me and wanted to quit their job right away, I would urge them to wait and let's create a plan and then see where that plan takes you. So, you know, to kind of slow your roll, let's take a look, let's do some, I mean, there are all kinds of books and exercises. The best exercise that I have ever used, and it was given to me, I didn't create it, but I've seen it again in Wishcraft, the book that I mentioned, Barbara Scher's book. I used that model. And then my own coach that I had been seeing, I've worked with her for almost 20 years, Jackie Sloan, had a version of it, and it's called the ideal day exercise. So for anybody listening who does feel like maybe there's a nudge, it's sort of like, it's like a little, and Greg Lavoie calls it that too. It's just like a little, like a little nudge that just won't go away. And so to honor that, to go through this process of discernment, the first thing would be to write an, it's kind of like a little essay, and I have a form for it that I share with new clients. And it's called the ideal day. It's 5 years from today. You wake up. It's, do the math for me, Brian. Let's see, we're in 2021. 21, 22, 23, 24, 22. So it's 2025, right? You wake up. Where are you? Mm-hmm. Right? Like literally from the beginning of their day to the end of their day. And I had one client write an 11-page ideal day. I had another client who had a dog in his ideal day. And I was like, Joe, I didn't know you have a dog. He's like, I don't. But this dog had like a more than a cameo role, co-starred in his ideal day, because that was part of his day. Was like, and you know, I think that's one of the things that a lot of people have loved about working from home is they get to be with their animals, or they get to, like, I had a friend, she got to nurse her baby and not have to go to the restroom and, you know, pump for her newborn. So, you know, it's given that sort of flexibility that we maybe haven't had.
Well, we've talked about, I think, some tools and information that people can use. You already went right past our next question.
Well, actually, the ideal day exercise, I just want to say a few more things about
it. Oh, yeah, please do. I'm sorry.
I encourage people to give themselves the time and space to really to write it. And again, I have prompts for it. You know, what one of the questions is, and this sounds like a dirty phone call, but it's, what are you wearing? Mm-hmm. You know, are you wearing t-shirts and shorts? Literally the wardrobe of work, whatever your work is it a uniform? Is it, you know, that has changed a lot now because of COVID, but you know, are you downtown? Are you in a cottage? Are you self-employed? You know, are you the leader? Are you following a leader? Another question is, what are the tools that you're using on the job? So for somebody who really wants to work with their hands, suddenly it shows up. And the thing about this exercise is things show up that people didn't even know they wanted. And I say, you know, don't judge yourself. Maybe, you know, if you're stepping out of a limo on Hollywood Boulevard or 54th Street in New York, there's no... We hold ourselves back because we don't want to be arrogant, or we don't want to be, you know, whatever. It's like there's no limit to this exercise. You can write anything you want. And, you know, I've never had anybody whose dream it was to, you know, open a bordello in Wheaton. It's always been, you know, something that, like this woman with the, you know, 11 page, she had a studio designed, you know, down to the the type of wood that was on the floor. The more detail, the better. And then suddenly people start to see a vision of what could be. And then the plan is then, the strategic plan then is like, here's where you are today. Here's where you want to be in 5 years. What are the steps to get there? And that's how I would help people, is really break it down into a plan. And again, I didn't create strategic planning. I learned it when I was in the hospital field. And that model lit me up. I was like, oh, I bet if this works for a hospital, it would work for me. So I had been using that model for quite a few years. And that's what I told Bill Kernan that one day. It's like, oh, I love this strategic planning model.
Well, I'm so glad that you said that about taking time.
Yes.
Because I feel like, and again, now I'm talking from the ministry point of view, and I just see this over and over again within ministry. And I'm sure you see it in all kinds of different jobs. So I don't think ministry is unique.
Yeah.
But where people are like, no, I'm just done. I can't do this.
Yeah.
And they start questioning their calling. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know if it's your calling per se, but maybe how that calling right. is being fulfilled.
Totally. The execution. You know, Brian, it's funny that you say that because when you introduce yourself, you always say the part-time associate pastor of Gary United Methodist. And I so admire that, because just by defining yourself that way, you create a boundary for people that is up, like, no question. It's right. Oh, sorry. It's right there. I just hit the mic. Mm-hmm. It's right there in front of your face and in front of our faces. And it gives us a warning, like, hey, I'm the part-time, not that you don't give it all, but that you're not going to give it all. And I think boundaries are a really important part of that, saying this is what I'll give and this is what I won't give. And you know, going back to my days in that job that was such a nightmare, you know, I sometimes missed the last train going from the city to Wheaton, which was like the 11:40.
Yeah, that's a
yeah,
late train.
It's crazy. I mean, that was a form of insanity, right? Thinking if I just work harder. So I didn't have healthy boundaries, and having healthy boundaries in relationships as well as in our jobs is really important. But you are being judged every single minute. And, you know, that's just that's the breaks, right? That's what I've learned about leadership is. Mm-hmm. I think the really good leaders, both in faith, in ministry, and in any kind of a profession, at some point you have to give up caring what people think. It doesn't mean that you don't care about the people, and it doesn't mean you don't care about your reputation, but you can't please all the people. Mm-hmm. And one of the lines I learned when I was in the National Speakers Association was, I'm not everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah.
And I can say that as an entrepreneur. It's harder for me to say it as a chamber president, and it's very difficult to say as a pastor because, you know, we're your flock. So, you know, we're stuck with the shepherds we get, you're stuck with the sheep you get, and hopefully people give you more grace than rating your sermons every Sunday.
Gary is a place full of grace.
It for me. Is. It really is.
So we're talking about mistakes that people make. What are some of the biggest missteps people make when they're thinking about career changes?
They don't do their research. People want to rush to action. Well, mm-hmm. especially when you're panicking, which mm-hmm. again, I experienced that panic, that feeling of, oh my gosh, I've got to do something. I got to do something. And then not knowing what to do, but acting, you know, it's the old ready, fire, aim. Being in action before they've done the process of discernment of what would be a good fit, before they've done interviews with people. I had a client who wanted to be a marriage and family therapist, and she'd never been through therapy. She'd never even talked to a marriage or family therapist. And yet she was thinking about committing to graduate school, thousands and thousands of dollars. So my recommendation to her was, you know, I referred her to some people that I knew that were in that business and in that industry. You've probably heard stories of people who go to medical school and then it turns out they're, you know, queasy about blood. I mean, or they've invested too much. I had a client who, you know, he didn't feel free to make any changes because their family had gotten used to the money he was making. And, you know, if it were up to him, he would do, you know, X, Y, Z, but he had a commitment to his family, a financial commitment. And so many times people feel they're trapped. And there were times when I wouldn't work with a client unless they were seeing a therapist, because I knew that there were issues that came up that that were, and I don't know why I knew. I just knew when it was something that was outside, you know, no strategic plan was going to help with the kinds of issues clients were, you know, some of my clients had. And there were times when I would consult with the therapist with permission from the client.
Sure.
But that was very rare. It's the idea that, you know, the people that I work with had to already be healthy, like mentally healthy, in the sense that they weren't carrying around a lot of baggage from the job before. And I will say, one of the things that freed me up when I got fired, I took 100% responsibility for that. I did not blame. I did not hold a grudge. I felt, and in fact, later, many years later, I got asked back and did some consulting for that firm, which is a very sweet victory. I went into the Aon Center. Right? That was like amazing to get asked back. And it was because I'd kept in touch with people. I think there's one thing I sort of neglected to mention about that. What had me stuck was that I didn't think I had a network. You know, we'd only been in Chicago a couple of years. I was blind to the network that I already had. And that was really a platform and a principle of my coaching as well, is that people have amazing networks that they haven't recognized. And that's where I came up with my book, Circles of Gold, because I found that inevitably the majority of people, I would ask, tell me about your network. And in fact, it was a buddy through Gary Church. He was a client. His name is Greg, and he's given me permission to tell the story. He had been a reporter. He'd been an editor. He'd opened the Reuters, you know, Reuters, the news service. He'd opened the bureau in Hong Kong. He'd worked in New York. He was covering finance. And on any given day, he would be interviewing, you know, titans of industry. But when I asked him to tell me about his network, he sort of hung his head and said, "Oh, you know, I really don't have a network." And I said, "Greg, you have more than a network. You have," and at that time I used the term, "golden Rolodex. You have a golden Rolodex. You can call anybody in New York. You could, you know, think of all the people you already know." And that is the biggest, as far as the biggest hurdle or roadblock that people have, it's misunderstanding what networking is about. It's not asking people for a job. It's asking people for ideas and opinions and recommendations that can then open the door to their thinking, which can open a door to an opportunity. So start with who you know. Start with who you know. And you know hundreds of people. When my clients would say, "Well, I don't want to use them," to which I would reply, "Then don't. You know how you feel when you're being used, and you know how you feel when you're being asked for." And I loved to use the term asking people for the wisdom of their counsel. Mm-hmm. And I know that's kind of, you know, highfalutin. I can get away with it. Not everybody can use those words, but asking people, I use the term IOR, ideas, opinions, and recommendations. I'm looking to transition into the field of XYZ. I've heard you're an expert. Could you share your ideas, opinions, and recommendations about how I might make that kind of a transition? People love to give their ideas, opinions, and recommendations. Nobody wants to be used, but we all love, you know, that joke about everybody's got, they're like belly buttons. Everybody's got one, right? Opinions. And people will generously give of their time and ideas if you approach them with respect for their time. I would always recommend a 20-minute interview, which is so short, you know, and most people will give 20 minutes. And then if you get them talking about their careers and their own career trajectory and ideas, they're going to talk forever. And sometimes they might even feed you lunch. I found that to be true, that I would ask people and they wouldn't even let me pick up the tab for the coffee, you know, because they felt there's something really, you know, that honors people when you ask them for their opinion.
Absolutely. These are wonderful suggestions. I hope that this is just a real rich blessing for people who I know who are listening, who are really asking some hard questions.
I hope so too, because I do know that dark night of the soul, and that's usually, it's kind of like with recovery, right? Where you get it, you got to hit the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you're willing to be, there's a requirement to be, there's a huge difference between being humble and humiliated. And I think sometimes people feel that if they ask for help, they feel humiliated. You don't have to be humiliated, but to be humble and to ask people for their ideas, opinions, and recommendations is like, it's hard to do for some people. It's like asking for directions. You know, it implies that you don't know what you're doing or you don't know where you're going. So there, it requires, and that's maybe another faith point, is that our faith has trained us that, you know, the meek shall inherit the earth. And it is the people who are willing to say, you know what, I'm lost. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where I want to be. You know, what would you do if you were in my shoes with my skills, with my knowledge and recommendation? Just like, as I mentioned, you know, it's like Bill saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. Sometimes people see, and that was the joy of coaching, really. I felt that I got to hold up a mirror to people, and every one of them, Brian, every client inspired me. Like, look at what you can do. Look what you've done. Look what you have the capability to do. And it's like holding up a mirror to their greatness. Mm. And even in my role at the Chamber, I mentioned to Mike Dyer, who is our chair of the Arts and Sports Tourism Committee, he's become a friend as well. And I said, you know, my job is really just bringing out the greatness in others. And that's the job of the committee chairs. That's the job of the board. That's the job of any good leader, is to bring out the greatness in others and to grow more leaders.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Vicki, I want to thank you for coming in and speaking with me today on the Pastor Brian podcast.
Thank you, Pastor Brian.
Being the inaugural guest. And also, we'll be sure to have links in the show notes to the Wheaton Chamber of Commerce.
Great.
And also a couple of the books you mentioned, but especially your book, which is
Circles of Gold.
Circles of Gold.
Honoring Your Network for Business and Career Success.
So we'll be sure to have that in the show notes so you can have it and learn a lot from Vicki. Vicki, thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Brian. It was truly an honor.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Again, thank you to our guest, Vicki Austin. And now receive this blessing. May the love of God the Father, the grace of God the Son, and the power of God the Holy Spirit be with you now and forevermore. Amen. Blessings until we are together soon. I'll look forward to praying with you.